So our next speaker is Dr. Iris Zachary. Her talk is on Think Globally, Act Locally, how central cancer registries can be a resource for other disease registries and surveillance activities. Dr. Zachary will identify key components of central cancer registries and formulate a plan for the development of a population-based registry. She will discuss the advantages of using central cancer registries as a model for developing and integrating other disease registries and improving surveillance activities. Dr. Zachary is Assistant Database Manager for the Missouri Cancer Registry and Research Center. She is also an Assistant Research Professor in the Department of Health Management and Informatics at the University of Missouri. She received her MS and PhD degrees in informatics at the University of Missouri. Please welcome Dr. Zachary.
My talk developed because we were looking at, my research is actually looking at the data elements that cancer registries are collecting. So I started looking at not only cancer registries, but at other disease registries. And staying with the theme of APHA, I was trying to find a broader application for Think Globally, Act Locally, how central cancer registries can be a resource for other disease registries. I want to acknowledge my co-authors, Dr. Jeanette Jackson-Thompson, the director of the Missouri Cancer Registry, Dr. Eduardo Samoas, the chair of the Health Management and Informatics Department at the University of Missouri, and Saba Yamane, our database manager at the registry. I have no relationships to disclose, and our funding agencies. So as Dr. Porter mentioned, I want to identify key components of central cancer registries, what is needed to formulate a plan for development of a population-based registry, and our future plans to work with other maybe rural registries to discuss advantages of using central cancer registries as a model for developing and integrating other disease registries and improving surveillance activities. A disease registry is a database that holds information about individuals diagnosed with a specific disease. The key components, and that's overall registries, are patient demographics, disease or the condition, and the treatment data. Now, if you have a surveillance, if you have a population-based registry, you may or may not have follow-up data. The establishment of cancer registries in the U.S., the first hospital-based cancer registry was established in Yale at New Haven Hospital in Connecticut, and the oldest population-based central cancer registry was founded in 1935 in Connecticut. In 1956, ACOS required all cancer registries cancer registries for all approved cancer programs. So, if your hospital wanted to have an approved program, they needed to have a cancer registry. Also, many European countries have similar developments at the same time. Other disease registries have been established, but really the cancer registry has the longest history of collecting data. Usually in your health departments, you have asthma registries, registries for diabetes, coronary artery disease registries. They are not as well established and often not population-based. They have less standardized data sets and sometimes a lack of common core data elements that is not as true because they collect differently. But the Central Cancer Registry has the most developed standard data set. Why do we have registries? Well, we need them for research, public health, clinical trials, cancer epidemiology, and they're really tools for research about etiology, diagnosis, treatment of disease. You cannot do anything without a registry. I was actually at a talk at a round table for nursing that somebody was talking about vaccines, and they were saying, well, we just need a vaccine registry. So that's, I will come back to the point later, that's one reason that we don't want more registries. We want to combine what we have and maybe then use that knowledge. So it's used by agencies to make important health decisions. An example is screening programs, and the other example would be like, you know, the need for vaccines. The purpose why we did this is to explore the practicality of using central cancer registries as a model and a foundation for integrated registries, and really to use what is collected at different places but overlaps. The importance of registries, I just wanted to point out, it's from the executive summary, the quality chasm, that really chronic disease, for several decades, the needs of the American public have been shifting from predominantly acute and episodic care to care for chronic conditions. And chronic conditions are now the leading cause. So basically, we are collecting a lot of data on chronic conditions already. And basically, for our methods, we examine the strengths and weaknesses of similarities and intersections and the differences in disease reporting in the different registries. And we use central cancer registries as reporting as central cancer registries as a model. I think that's one bullet point too much. We identified commonalities and differences among disease registries, and we assessed the availability of software and interoperability. The characteristics of cancer registries at hospital-based cancer registries and central cancer registries are we have structured data elements, standardized data layouts, and established standards for measuring quality, completeness, and timeliness. And we have a long experience with secure electronic data transmission. Those characteristics form the basis for a powerful and underutilized tool, and basically which are disease registries. So registry strengths that we identified, and that goes across, you know, that is for all disease registries. They can be used to make health decisions like screening, follow-up for one or more disease. And if you have the registries linked, like a lot of people that have cancer at the time have other conditions, so they may or may not be in another registry also. So if you would have that in one registry or at least linked, there could be reminders or flags or other things for not only treatment of one disease. Which would help in coordination of care. It could identify gaps, like missing cases. A lot of the leukemia cases are treated, and you can be diagnosed and treated in the in a doctor's office now. For some of the conditions, for prostate cases, the same thing. Not everybody is treated in the hospital anymore. And we could increase public awareness and prevent chronic diseases. To determine best practices and support evidence-based care. Some of the challenges, there's a lot of, because of the development in treatment and medical practice, it changes rapidly for all diseases. And there's changing requirements in coding and treatment, therefore. There's constant, you have constant updating in the software, you have constant updating in how you have to code, so that requires constant update in training and how those diseases are reported. That's already a major challenge for like just the cancer registry. So if you have all diseases in one registry, so like one main disease registry, that would be a major challenge to keep up with all those changes. We made this comparison between the EHR and the Central Cancer Registry because I've been asked many times, why don't you just get that information from the electronic health record? So electronic health records are patient-based, not population-based, and they basically capture point-of-care data. They don't have longitudinal data. The EHR is a legal record, and not central cancer registries are not really patient, not legal records, they're patient records. And EHRs are not intended for reporting. Central cancer registries are intended for reporting and surveillance and to identify gaps. And EHRs are not usually used to track quality unless somebody does a specified study. And central cancer registries support quality initiatives. So this is a basic breakdown of the information flow in registries. So you basically have your data that flows in from hospitals and non-hospital sources. Non-hospital sources now include laboratories, path labs. In Missouri, it's nursing homes. It can be nursing homes and long-term care facilities. At the registry, the case consolidation, quality control, and follow-back happens, so that's the data compilation and analysis at that point. And the data distribution and analysis for annual reports data sets. For in Missouri, we have a system, a statewide system that is MICA, where our data is sent to the state, and you can either, well, you can request data, but you can also do some of the data, request some of the data on the website. We have national submissions, so our data feeds into some national databases. Advantages of using one data set for disease registries, basically you have less, I wouldn't say no redundancy, less redundancy in data fields that are collected. So all disease registries collect demographics. I mean, the trauma registries, diabetes, everybody collects that. It would be an easier exchange of information, consistency of data through reduced work, quality work and accuracy. We at the registry at the end of the year do quality control in terms of, for example, based on site and sex. So you would check for names, and then you would check that you don't have any female prostate cases or something like that. So that's a lot of work at the end of the year, and that's what we do to keep our quality up. So I'm assuming that other registries have the same quality work at the end of the year to get their data sets quality controlled. And it would help with interoperability to exchange data. Those are just some samples of registry data sets. The Alzheimer registries actually have, so the Central Cancer Registry has required data fields of 228. We used to come from 25 fields, and it's now 228 fields. The Alzheimer Registry has a minimum data set of 61 fields, but they have 9 data sets that are divided into 9 different areas, and they have 900 data elements. So diabetes, I couldn't find very specific information on diabetes, but all of these registries have all their data fields. So you don't have the overlap in all the fields, but obviously there will be a lot of overlap. So we are actually collecting a lot of redundant data. So I just wanted to point the model out, DIKW data model for data. You know, the data without any meaning, it's just a collected data. And if you add information to it, you actually, and knowledge, you actually have the wisdom, and then you can interpret the data. So the registry, the plan for a registry is not very complicated. We have a little bit more specific plan for our rural registries. When they start up, you have to define your objectives and your population for your registry. You have to basically know your size and number of cases for the registry, and determine the location and your personnel. You need the types and the you need to identify the types of personnel you need for your registry and the training, and the equipment, hardware and software. And for our results, basically are to model. Model to expand the scope of central cancer registries and to interrelate and connect various disease registries is possible. So we, our next step would actually is actually to really find those overlaps and overlay the all the data sets. And in stage two of meaningful use, it's already making a difference to central cancer registries with the collection of comorbid conditions, which is actually required. So in all, if you're collecting, if you're combining the disease registries or at least have one data set that the disease would show the overlap of the disease registries, those comorbid conditions would be included. And stage three of meaningful use represents a step towards interoperability, which that would also solve stage three. In order to be more interoperable, disease registries can benefit from each other while working towards a common data set and interoperability. I think it is in the interest of all the disease registries, and it would benefit all the disease registries to include multiple conditions and diseases and to have a framework that becomes useful for implementation in various settings. And it could be applicable for diverse data in diverse settings. Basically, you could go beyond disease registries and, you know, if this is actually working. So, any questions?
We want to thank Dr. Zachary for that wonderful presentation on cancer registries, and also Ms. Holland. I would like at this time to open it up for questions and answers, any questions that you may have for either of our speakers. Yes. Can see how important it is for us for these surveillances to occur when we have these major emergencies such as Hurricane Sandy. I'm from Texas. I was involved in a big storm and lost everything that I owned. Was called a tropical storm, but it was really sort of like a hurricane. and so we lost everything. But it was very difficult for me as a public health professional to get any kind of data on the status at any given time, as well as any information thereafter. So it was so important. I see how each of you have worked with, in cooperative efforts with various professionals in order to obtain the information that that you needed to get in order to keep us all informed. Very, very important. Any questions for Dr. Zachary? Any other questions at all? Yes.
We have right now, it is not a required field as of right now, but we do collect comorbid conditions in the text.
Okay, so if that's okay, then how many diagnoses you collect or you can collect as comorbidities? The primary diagnosis might be cancer, mm-hmm. right? The cancer registry, and then you know how many.
You mean how many fields people have for the I don't know exactly how many it will be, but it will be more than one for sure because we have
up to five.
Okay, mm-hmm. up to five.
Okay. Okay. Other questions? Are there other questions? Yes.
Dr. Zachary, you mentioned some of the quality control checks that have to be done on the data. And I'm not sure about the specifics, but I thought that that there's sort of like these awards that are given to different cancer registries.
Yes.
So if you meet the certain criteria, you get a gold award.
Yes, golden silver, yes.
Yeah. Would you mind describing what those criteria are? Because I think that would be helpful to think about for other registries as well. I work on a trauma registry. I mean, always sort of invoke that. Wouldn't it be great if you could say this was a gold level or a silver level?
Okay, well, then I need to talk to you afterwards because I have some questions for trauma also. Well, for the cancer registry, we have, when we submit our data, we have quality control on how many, on, well, that's true. Okay, we cannot have duplicates. We have a duplicate for the model, we cannot have duplicates. Help me out. I don't do this as much anymore.
So the percent of missing or unknown for sex, race, age of diagnosis, and county of residence at diagnosis. And we do what we call inter-record edits to, so that we can't have duplicate cases, they have to be consolidated. Mm-hmm. And then we do text code to make sure, it may pass edits because it's a legitimate code, but then we check the text and it may be miscoded. So a gold certified registry equivocates to having 100% of your records pass edits and fewer than 2% missing or unknown in those categories, silver, and 95% of the expected cases, 90% of the complete cases, and like 3 to 5% missing or unknown for silver. And that's the equivalent of the 90% is publication standard, and the 95% gold is higher than that. And so, but you're editing and evaluate on a limited number of data elements. So all of these other data elements that are out there may be of lesser quality even in a gold standard registry. And that's why her mention of 25 required fields at a decade ago versus 225 now, you have to balance the quantity versus the quality because if you have that many fields, you're not going to be able to do complete quality control on your field.
Thank you. Do you have any level in the trauma suites right now? Do they have any?
I haven't seen any like national standard.
Right.
Okay. I mean, there's a national standard for trauma registries.
Right.
That is standards. And so, but that speaks more to a standard set of variables to be collected, not what how many of these hit perfect.
Yeah. That's right.
So, but we've had lots of discussions within the trauma community about establishing those things for quality standards.
Are there other questions? Are there other statements?
I was just going to say it'd be interesting to do that with birth and death jurisdictions, because I mean the birth certificate has over 250 items too,
right? And death, actually, your death records, we had like we did quality check because we have you report about we take in the registry cause of death. So and we had you know that quality issues with how death is recorded. It's not always recorded because at the
That is a good example because every state follows the same directives from the National Center for Health Statistics. Many states have non-medical coroners. Well, I should say there are states that have many of their death certificates signed by non-medical coroners. Missouri is very fortunate. We have very few death certificates signed by non-medical coroners. Every 150 counties, it's not an option, but very few have that. And the quality of the death certificate varies greatly from one state to another. And for example, interval between diagnosis and death, we get over 50% of our death certificates having the interval completed, when many states have 0 to 10%. And going back to your trauma registry, I think one of the things that if you have a registry that has qualification standards and you have a new registry, look at something that has been established when you're trying to establish your standards. Why reinvent the wheel?
Great. Other questions, other comments? Well, a very special thank you to Ms. Holland and to Dr. Zachary.